snapped from the balconies. Blaze lurched forward.
No!
Dante screamed from the darkness. It was the last thing Blaze heard. Chapter 39. Lights blinked to life across the windows of the palace. Shouts rang throughout the flat, muffled by shutters. Something's wrong, Dante said. Samba didn't look his way.
You think?
Should have left my mouse in there.
Men were moving onto the palace balconies, bearing their strange cross-shaped bows.
Moved it out when... A figure materialized outside the palace walls. It was too dim to make out his face, but given how he'd showed up, it could only be Blaze. Bows clicked and snapped, sending 2-foot bolts slamming into the flat. Dante bit his cheeks until he tasted blood, flooding his hands with shadows.
No!
A black lance shot from the deck and struck Blaze in the back. Blaze pitched forward on his face. Dante was too shocked to speak. He ran from cover. Blaze!
Stop it!
Samba hissed. Blaze hadn't moved since falling to the ground. 2 bolts stuck from his back. Others protruded from the surface of the flat. Dante reached out to him with the nether, but there was nothing to mend. His heart had stopped. A bolt flew past Dante's face and tocked into the wooden ground. He whipped out his hand, shredding the soldier with a pulse of nether. Weapons clacked from the balcony. Projectiles sailed past. Dante enveloped the whole thing in a ball of darkness. Men shouted in surprise. A felt bag lay beside Blaze, no larger than a coin purse. Dante picked it up, but it was empty. Its mouth open. He glanced to all sides. Above him, the shadow sphere was torn away, ripped down by a spirish nethermancer. Shadows sizzled toward him. He scrabbled back, meeting them with a blunt swipe of his own. The forces burst against each other. An iron bolt tore through his cloak, pinning it to the flat. Dante jerked it free and backpedaled from Blaze, who was surrounded by a red stain, the blood diffused by the pouring rain. Another missile of shadows arced at his chest. Again he met it, but it bashed his defenses to splinters. He turned and ran, jagging side to side to throw off the archers. The doors of the palace flew open. 20 men charged across the rain-slick flat with a roar. Still tucked against the storage building, Samba sent black darts flying across the night. Men grunted and fell. A horn blasted from the palace. Within moments, men were shouting up and down the platform.
"Come on,"
Dante said. Samba fell in behind him. Dante headed straight for the edge of the flat, leapt over its short rail, and soared into empty space. Samba's cloak flapped behind him. Branches tore at Dante's clothes. He shielded his face, slowed by the mats of leaves, and slammed onto the roof of a building on the flat below. As he slid down the wet, woven leaves of the roof, Samba impacted above him. A soldier grunted and plummeted through the open air. He'd missed the roof and the platform below it. He tumbled into the gap between the flats, screaming as he went. Dante slid to the edge of the roof and dropped to the flat with a squelch of rain. Samba joined him, looking spooked but unhurt.
"What just happened?"
"Blaze is dead. Selen's gone, and the minister is a nethermancer of the highest order."
Samba was silent for 1 second. "We have to go back. Nothing is more important."
"Don't you think I know that?"
Blaze snarled.
"The flat is crawling with soldiers, and the minister could be a match for either of us. We had no choice."
He oriented himself, then took off, running toward the trunk of the tree. Men were yelling back and forth from the palace flat, but Dante was screened by walls of branches and leaves. Samba had managed their illusion of soldiers' garb. Faces peeped from the windows, but saw them as nothing more than 2 of the minister's men responding to the call of the horn.
"Don't tell me you're giving up," Samba said. "Not after this."
Dante's head beat with such fierce rage he could hardly speak.
"We need to get back to the ground."
They ran full tilt toward the trunk. Men in green uniforms raced up the stairs. Dante hit the stairs and ran down, veering around the upward traffic. Soldiers jostled him. Somba produced a sealed letter, another illusion, and bore it before him like a burning brand. The troops gave them a little more space. They made it all the way to the three-part checkpoint without issue. There, the tall man whose eyes seemed chiseled into his face stood before them.
Password.
Parakeet, Dante said. The man cocked his head.
Emergency password.
See you in hell, Dante said.
The man stepped back and shouted,
Intru-
Dante blasted a hole through the center of his chest. He staggered back, toppled over the platform ledge, and dropped toward the next turn of the staircase far below. As Dante engaged the pole, lowering the stairs, Somba whipped a spike of shadows into the three soldiers, taking aim at them from the bottom of the crossing. The bolt flew over Dante's head and vanished into the branches. The stairs finished descending. Dante tripped another pole and sprinted toward the second platform. As the first began to rise up, the third and final platform began to sink into place. He and Somba slid onto the second. For the moment, they were alone, but there were bodies at both ends of the crossing. The third stairs lowered with agonizing slowness. While they were still mid-descent, Dante jumped on them and ran across. They had barely made it around the curve of the trunk before they ran into more soldiers.
"Someone killed the watchman," Dante said. "Secure the area. I'm going for help."
He continued down before they could ask questions. Quickly, he loomed Knack and Morn, ordering the troops to rush to the heart of Khorl at maximum speed. High above, the horn went off again, a mournful bleat in the nighttime rain. An argument carried down from the checkpoint. Dante got off the stairs onto the flat connecting it to the other Lauren and jogged past the houses as fast as he dared. A drunk watched him pass, slack-jawed, bottle forgotten in his hand. Rain spilled from the leaves. Dante's breath hung in the air. The flat grew darker and darker. After a minute, he had to slow to make sure he wasn't about to trip.
"Does this look wrong to you?" he said.
Somba eyed him.
"Wrong for what?"
"For the crossing, to the other Lauren."
Back near the trunk, torches flapped. Voices rose, soldiers asking questions.
Somba's face paled. "This isn't the crossing."
"Then where are we? Then why did you let me go this way?"
"I assumed if you were going to the crossing, you would go to the crossing."
He pointed into the branches.
"It's up there." "There's no way down," a voice called from far behind them.
Dante closed his eyes. It was the minister.
"Your friend is dead. Give yourselves up, and I'll ensure your deaths are just as fast as his was."
He let a few seconds pass. The torches swam closer, half hidden by stray branches. Back toward the trunk, house doors opened. Silhouettes walked out with their hands up.
"You don't understand the generosity of my offer," the minister continued, audibly closer. "The alternative is you force me to hunt you down, and I force you into a box through a hole that is just too small for you to fit through. Unfortunately, that means you'll have to leave half your skin behind. We'll keep you in the box until the weather warms up. Then we'll move you to a cage and hang you, flayed but alive, for the crows."
He laughed a little. Then his tone grew weary.
"Actually, I just made that up. That should illustrate there is no limit to the ways a man can inflict pain. Yours will be slow, but ever present. It will last as long as I want it to last. You will wish you had chosen differently, but soon you will forget that you had another choice. Because you'll forget your life was ever anything but you and your pain. That will be your world. Until I choose to let you die. Does that sound implausible? Who would possibly have the patience to pursue justice for such a long time?
He chuckled, the noise hanging in the air.
As tonight proves, you don't know me at all.
Decide, Somber said softly. We can't hide.
Dante glanced to all sides. Even Blaze couldn't. I felt the minister push him out of the shadows.
Then we're dead men. The only thing we can do is try to take him with us.
If Blaze taught me one thing, it's that there are always other choices. It all depends on how foolish you're willing to look.
The torches were within 100 feet now, advancing slowly as the soldiers inspected homes and thrashed the branches.
Somber laughed wryly. We have failed in everything. When it comes to our esteem, we have no more distance to drop.
Funny you should say that. Ready for a leap of faith? Before Somber could answer, he jogged toward the end of the flat. The branches thinned, showing scraps of dark sky. The rain fell in merciless layers. Dante reached the end and stared into the darkness. He couldn't see anything but a few spindly branches below them, but the ends of the flats weren't typically blazing with light, and the rain hazed everything. It didn't matter.
I can smell you out there.
The minister's voice was closer than ever.
It's time to decide. End it now, or spend decades of torture wishing you could.
Hang on to me, Dante said, and pray my mind is as clear as it feels.
Somber took his arm. Together, they walked off the end of the platform.
Rain fell with them, as if suspended in midair. After a moment, they outpaced it, speeding downward through the night. The minister was saying something more, commanding his troops. Dante could hear it in his tone, but that tone was merely annoyed, with none of the urgency of someone who understood what had just happened. A sky of grief and an ocean of wrath threatened to swallow him. He wanted to be consumed, but he kept it at bay, opening an eye in the storm of his mind. He only had to hang on to the calm for another few seconds. That knowledge was what saved him.
Branches ripped at them. Somber clung tight. Beside them, flats flashed past.
Wood smoke hanging in the rain, bleak lights shining from cracks in the shutters.
Dante leaned forward to try to fall away from the tree's mass, but it did little good.
A flat zoomed up to meet them. White heat shot through his body. Blood flowed from a score of scratches and scrapes on his face and hands. He fed it to the nether, then drove the shadows straight down. The thunder of the crack boomed through the night. Splinters burst around them, spinning in the rain. They passed through the hole in the flat without a snag. He still couldn't see the ground, but he felt for it. His consciousness speeding through the nether suspended in the air and the rain, and then he felt dirt, muddy, and rich with death and life, eons of it, the grave of the world since the birth of the first things. He was moments away from it. Finally he could see it, puddled and sopping. But that was just the surface. What lay beneath was hard enough to smash them beyond recognition. Beside him, Somber began to mutter the last prayer of the cycle of Aron. He'd started too late. They'd be dead before he reached the third line.
Hold your breath and shut your eyes tight, Dante sounded into the wind.
He moved his mind into the dirt. He made the dirt take on water and prepare. He wondered if it would be enough. As they struck the surface of the mud, rather than compressing, squeezing beneath them until it was as hard as rock, it flowed away beneath them. They fell through the watery muck, and it fell with them, descending beneath the skin of the earth. Clay closed over them like a cold hand. Dante forced himself not to breathe, just a little longer. They lurched to a stop. He squeezed Somba's arm twice. The dirt thickened beneath them until they began to rise. His lungs burned. Mud poured over his body, filling his ears, pooling inside his cloak. He exhaled, forcing his lungs to do something besides inhale, burbling the thick earth. With a flatulent pop, they burst to the surface, filthy and gasping. Dante's legs were too shaky to stand. He lay in the muck, hammered by the rain.
"We're alive," Somba croaked. "Time to complete our duty."
Dante forced himself to his feet. There was some shouting going on above them, but none seemed alerted to the fact two interlopers had just plunged to their apparent death, only to be reborn from the earth.
"No matter what happens, keep them off me."
"What are you doing?"
"Destroying the minister, and his ability to make war."
He drew his sword, the curved bone of Bardon dull white in the faint light coming from the buildings and the roots of the tree. Dante walked through the mud, holding the blade at his side. Somba splashed behind him. A rooty tendril forked from a larger leg of the tree. Dante raised his sword and wheeled it down. The weapon passed through with a crisp snap of wood.
"God's in the sky," Somba whispered.
Dante dropped his mental walls. The sea of fury crashed down upon him. He strode from root to root, cleaving each one with angled downward strokes. Many were too wide for his sword to part with a single blow, and he had to sever these with a series of axe-like cuts. Chipped wood spun to the ground. A man approached the noise, lantern held aloft beside his head. Somba struck him down with a beam of shadows. Within a minute, Dante had cut through 30 roots. Bass croaks filtered from the tree, but it hadn't yet begun to sway. He moved to one of the largest roots, one as wide around as a house, and hacked at it relentlessly, boring through with a series of savage swings. The blade never snagged or caught, sliding out as easily as it drove through. When it slashed through the last segment of the root, the Lorin groaned like a sick giant. Two soldiers ran down the stairs attached to the roots, demanding to know what was going on. Somba replied with spears of nether. The men tumbled over the rails and splashed into the mud. Dante began to laugh. He was moving too fast for them. The minister and most of his troops were still 300 feet above, most likely threshing the foliage for their hidden quarry. And for Selen? Even if they understood what Dante was doing, it would take them minutes to get down the stairs. He would not give them that long. He moved to the next largest route. It split within seconds. He destroyed all those around it, feeling outside of himself, holy, the avatar of Aron's anger. Nak looned him to let him know his people were nearing. Dante barely had the presence of mind to acknowledge this. All he could see were the roots. Many were enveloped by buildings, out of reach unless he were to hack his way through the houses and pubs, too. But more than enough were exposed. Another clap of false thunder shattered the darkness. The tree listed, leaves shaking with the sound of breaking surf, then juddered to a stop, leaning visibly. Shrill screams pierced above the roaring moans of warping wood. Somba knocked down anyone who came close. A single arrow flew past Dante. People fled their homes in the roots, dashing into the woods, clutching children and bags of hastily assembled goods. The tree listed again, squealing and crackling.
It leaned and leaned, as gradual yet inexorable as a sunset. 20 feet away, a root popped in half, showering a house with shards of wood. Dante was covered in mud and blood and splinters, hands blistering, clothes soaked. Another root snapped under the pressure of the tree's gigantic weight.
"It's time to go," Samba said.
Dante lowered his sword. It was gummy with sap, but showed no signs of wear. He began to speak, but was drowned out by another cacophonous groan. Dust and sand fell from where the roots bundled into the base of the trunk. Scores of people were screaming from the rounds and flats. Feet trampled the stairs. Dante backed up, mud sucking at his boots. Wood cracked on all sides. The tree lurched to the right. He turned and ran. He'd no sooner cleared the roots than a body fell into the muck in front of him. Above, the tree tilted crazily, a man too tired to keep standing but too sore to lower himself any faster. It was so big it felt like it wasn't the tree that was tipping, but the world, that the earth had spun loose from its axis and was yawing madly toward some final end. The Loren was tipping away to Dante's right, roughly to 2 o'clock, but he ran for 100 yards before stopping.
"And what now?" Somba said.
"I watch my revenge."
"Congratulations. There is no way for the minister to survive, but what about Selin?"
Dante hadn't given that much thought. Since Blaze had been knocked to the palace flat, his only concern had been tearing it all to the ground. The Loren's lean accelerated. Dark shapes fell from above, thudding into the muddy ground. A cup smashed 6 feet from Dante. He backed further away. Roots snapped, one after another, in a ceaseless chain. The top of the tree swung through space, smashing into its neighbor, flats snarling and popping. The screams faded, hidden behind the deafening roar of rending wood and the 1,000 impacts of branches against each other. The fall slowed, tangled in the other tree. The entire Loren rolled loose and cleaved down through the air. Dante crouched and covered his ears. It hit the ground so hard he was jarred onto his side. Branches cracked and settled. Debris rained everywhere. Heavy lorebells and fluttering leaves. Rain poured through the hole in the sky. Survivors wailed from the wreckage and the neighboring trees. As Dante watched, lost in the spectacle, steps sounded behind him. He whirled. Morn, Ast, C, and 2 of the scouts jogged up, weapons out. They came to a stop, gaping.
"What am I seeing?" Ast said. "You did this, didn't you?" Morn said.
Dante wiped rain and mud from his eyes. "Blaze is dead. Now so is the minister." C drifted forward. "What about Selin?"
Dante gestured toward the enormous crown of the felled tree. "It's somewhere in there."
"The minister may be gone, but his army remains," Somba declared. "We have to find Selin before one of his commanders regroups and secures the tree."
Dante glanced back into the woods. Hundreds of lights had come on in the homes in the other Lorens. Silhouettes lined the flats. "Our people will be here in minutes. They can only hold back the resistance for so long. We don't have time to waste."
"It's just a little black ball, right?"
C glanced between them. "How are we supposed to find that in 10,000 tons of fallen tree?"
"We'll have to figure that out on the job."
Dante put away his sword and ran toward the tree. The others fell in step behind him. Except for leaves and rain, detritus had stopped falling from above. Broken branches and smashed homes jutted from the mud. Dante swerved around a severed leg. The body was nowhere to be seen. People lurched through the remnants like zombies, reaching out for Dante as he passed. The tree had been 1/10 of a mile tall, and, with flats reaching to all sides at least as wide. Many of its branches had torn away,
and were now jumbled among flats and former structures. It would be impossible to search in an orderly fashion.
"This will sound like a dumb question," C said, clambering behind him up the ramp of an upended flat. "But do you remember where you last saw it?"
"The palace flat. Good luck recognizing that now." He slid down a branch and dropped to the ground. One foot landed in mud, the other in what was left of a body. He grimaced and stepped back. "But I know where to find it." His clothes were sodden and heavy with mud, but blood was the most insidious substance there was. Whatever it touched, it stained. He turned the nether on himself. It swirled to his knees, seeking Blaze's blood. He hesitated, then opened a connection between that blood and the rest of it. Pressure pricked the front of his head. As with the deep stone, it didn't appear in a single point, but several. He chose not to think through the implication. One point pulsed much stronger than the others. He headed that way, scrambling over branches and boards. A pair of legs projected from the mud, the body buried from the waist up. Dante made his way around a miraculously intact public house, its sign dangling from the chain above the door. Its roof had collapsed, and a subsequent fire was attempting to start inside, but despite whatever lamp oil it was feeding on, it could find little purchase on the rain-soaked wood.
"Help me,"
a woman cried, clutching the rags of a body buried under a crush of branches.
"You have to help me."
Dante strode past, swerving away from the worst of the fall, passing quickly over the sparser wreckage of the fringes. The pressure grew slowly, then mounted. He turned back into the thick of things, following the netherial cord over a cracked flat. Beside the trunk, a handful of survivors were emerging from the rounds, gawking in shock. Ahead, a flat was broken over a giant round limb, its middle propped up by 10 feet. Dante passed under it. On the other side, structures lay in a dense rubble of wood and stone. The palace was unrecognizable, a mound of devastation that looked as if an angry Gashan had descended from his throne of war to pound it to pieces with his sledge. The pressure in Dante's skull became painful. As he approached a jumbled wall, including a 20-foot chunk of flat, he knew he'd found it. He closed the connection.
"He's here." His voice quavered. "There's a good chance Selen is too."
"Check the bodies," Somba said. "Especially the ministers if you see him. They had a few minutes to find it before we brought down the tree." The others moved out, but Dante stared at the rubble. He pulled on a loose board. It bent, then slid from his fingers and whapped back into place. He got out his sword. With 4 cuts, he knocked a door through the wood, the rectangle dangling from an upper corner. He pulled it toward him and trimmed the wet scrap of wood holding it up. It dropped to the mud. The back of a head showed beneath a muddy cloak. Dante dropped to his knees. The body was more intact than it had a right to be, but even if Blaze hadn't been dead when the Lauren fell, and Dante was sure he had been, he would be now. Somba freed the body's right hand from the muck and opened it. It was empty. The left arm was smashed, and it was clear at a glance its hand held nothing. Dante felt himself collapsing, tumbling in on himself from all sides. He could no longer hold it in. He wailed one long and pointless note that seemed to hold all his sorrow in its tune. But when that trailed off, the hurt was still there. He told himself that he had killed the minister, but found that mattered for nothing. Blaze was dead. Blaze was dead. And though that death had come in service of saving Narashtovic, Dante had been the instrument of his passage. As he'd been for so many others.
Blaze had been his only friend, at a time when that friendship was the one thing standing between Dante and being stabbed in the streets of Bressel. Blaze hadn't had to do that. He could have gone his own way. Instead, he'd gone with Dante, saving him. In the process, he'd doomed himself. Somber crouched beside Dante and hesitantly touched his shoulder. It isn't here. Dante shook his head, spilling tears. Rain drummed the ruins. Wood clacked, stirred by someone outside the makeshift tomb encasing Blaze. This isn't helping us, Somber said. We have to find it before the Spirish soldiers find us here, or this was all for nothing. Dante knew this was true, but he couldn't bring himself to speak, let alone stand. He knelt there, rain soaking his knees and shins. After a moment he heard Somber leave. His loon pulsed. Mechanically he answered. Mac said, Your troops inform me they're nearly on scene. Entirely confused about the nature of that scene. Where would you have them meet you? Doesn't matter, Dante said. I assume it matters to them, since they don't know where you are. It's over. Tell them to stay where they are.
You found it?
Mac's voice rose.
Dante, what's going on?
Dante shut down the loon. He moved into the nether, but as before, there was nothing to use for it. The flesh was inert. The nether in it was now tasked with consuming, not mending. He might force it back together, but that would be nothing more than ghoulish cosmetics. But perhaps that was not true. Perhaps that was just what he had been taught. It didn't make any difference that people like Kali had never been able to bring back the dead. He wasn't Kali, or any of the others. He sat back, calmed his mind, and touched the shadows.
People of Khorl!
A voice boomed through the night.
Dante looked up in shock.
The minister's voice was ragged, husky, but as strong as ever.
After 1,000 years, the agents of Narashtovik have come back to try to finish their genocide. They are among us. Find them. Find them and shout out so they may be purged.
Dante surged to his feet and reactivated his loon.
Nak, tell the troops to circle to the northeast of the Downs Tree and to be extremely careful. The minister's right on top of us. Got it?
Got it.
Dante cast about. He had to find Selen before the minister could clear the area. He didn't know how the man had survived. He must have evacuated across a connecting flat to another tree. But the world had once again turned on its head. All that mattered was Selen. He stumbled out of the tomb, hunched down and scanned the broken, churned-up ground. A part of him was close to hysteria, to hope he'd stumble over a plum-sized black object in the middle of all this destruction. He felt through the nether, hunting for any sign of its heft there. But it hadn't stood out to him during the brief moment he'd held it in the Woden's, and it didn't stand out to him now. Every few seconds, someone shouted from the darkness. Most were asking for help, but some claimed to see foreigners. Enemies. A hint of black shined from the mud. Dante bent and pawed at it, slicing his finger on a broken mug. Idiotic. Selen didn't gleam. He moved on.
Pointless, his mind screamed. He ought to sneak up on the minister and murder him. Split the man in half.
But that would only martyr him. Someone else would march his troops on Narashtovik instead. A silhouette jogged at him through the rain. He swept out his sword. Sea splashed up in front of him.
Somber told me you'd be here.
And I'm searching for Selen. The minister is back.
I heard.
She held out her closed hand.
So, I thought you might want this.
It dropped in his palm with the weight of a mountain. Black, lightless. His knees quivered.
How did you find it?
Later. Her lips pulled back in a grimace. She tossed her head, looking away.
Now take it and use it before I do.
He crushed her to his chest, then stepped back and held Selen in his open hand. It felt different this time. Ready. He fell into it like a hole in the ground. The rain hovered in the air. C was motionless, her hair unstirred by the wind which had stopped as well. The flicker of a fire down the broken flat became an unwinking glare. All the world was frozen, ended, complete. A million new worlds began in that world's place. Every dream, every wish, waited like a doorway. All he had to do was step through. The power to level Kor, to expand his reach into the nether tenfold, and walk the earth like a god. To live and go on living for century after century, young and unchanged while everything else withered, decayed, and became replaced by its offspring. Doors spread to all sides, promising health, prosperity, strength and wisdom beyond all measure. He felt as tall as a Lauren, as invincible as the Wodens, as unstoppable as a river, and as mighty as a Rawn. If he chose the right door, he could feel that way forever. The doors converged, coming together like cards found on a table being swept back into a deck. In a blur of possibilities and promises, they folded into a single portal. He stepped through. Chapter 40. Nothingness. No sensations. No feelings, no thoughts, no place. Then somethingness, although there was still no sense of time nor self, like the memory of sleep. There was an openness and emptiness, like falling, or like the apex of a leap into space, but there was no sense of danger to the ceiling. It just was. With it came the feeling of a thing about to begin, like the eastern horizon on the moment before dawn. And then stars everywhere, as far as the eye could see. Not that there were any eyes to see with. A field of black and silver that scrolled on and on, like the view from a rolling carriage. It was infinity, startling and eternal, and so achingly beautiful you felt blessed to be allowed to see it. He was himself again. He was 6 years old, and he was proud of this because it had just happened. For his birthday, his mother had given him a sling. Then she'd told him to go catch something with it so they wouldn't be hungry. He'd said, okay, and ran into the forest behind the houses, and that's where he was now. Only he'd kind of forgotten about the rabbits and the squirrels, and was hucking rocks at chunks and leaves instead, or just whirling the sling around his head to hear it whoosh. The forest was big, and he'd seen a lot of it because he wasn't afraid. But there was always more to see. He ran past the tree with the bees, hopping on one leg so they wouldn't sting him, and then past the birches, where he didn't stop to peel the papery bark because he wanted to get some more stones and see if he could use the sling to skip them all the way across the stream. And he went to do that for a while, and it was fun. When it got less fun, he went down to where the stream got wide
and ran across the beaver dam to the other side. Running felt good, so he kept going, all the way across the meadow with the stumps and into the piney canyons on the other side. They smelled good, like when you cut them with a knife. But he'd never gone all the way through them because there wasn't anything to see in them. That's when he saw the rabbit in the mulch beneath the tree. He didn't really want to kill it, and that was probably why he missed it with his first stone. The stone spat dirt everywhere, and the rabbit bolted up the canyon, back legs flying like the fastest thing in the world. He didn't stop to find his stone, just chased the bunny. He ran after it to the next canyon, and then stopped to look at him. Rabbits weren't too smart, and he guessed that was why it was okay to shoot them. He whirled his sling, but missed again. It ran more, and he chased more. It went into some brush, and he looked for it, and then stomped around to try to scare it out. It was smarter that time, though, because it didn't get scared. Maybe when he'd gone around to the other side of the brush, it had snuck out the way it came in. Whatever it had done, it had tricked him. It was no good dealing with a tricky rabbit. He walked away from the shrubs so it could fool someone else instead. He was further into the canyons than he'd been before, and he wanted to see what was beyond. He ran on some more, twirling his sling around. He got to the top of a ridge. After a little ways beyond it, the trees thinned. There was a meadow, with a house, and some fields behind it. A girl ran toward the house, blonde hair flying behind her, and he thought she was having fun like he was, but she was screaming, "Daddy! Help me, Daddy!" He thought she was just a girl being scared of nothing, but a yellow dog bounded out of the tall grass, not friendly like dogs did, but in the way of a bigger animal that meant to eat a smaller one. The girl ran and ran, but the dog got closer. He started running too, whipping his arm around to build up speed in the sling. A dog was much bigger than a rabbit, and he knew he could hit it, but he was too far away. The dog would get to her before he could get to it. She was going to get hurt. "Daddy," she said, and her voice pierced everywhere. "It's chasing me." The dog bounded at her heels. He slung the stone forward, thinking he might scare it, but it fell short in the grass. The dog nipped at her heels. She shrieked. A man ran from the house. He had a stick in his hands and a mad look on his face. The dog swerved away, but then remembered it was hungry and went back to nip at the girl. The man got to her and scooped her up in one hand like she was nothing. The dog stopped and backed up, watching him. "You get away," the man said. "Get out, now!" He swung the stick through the air. "I'll beat the mean out of you!" The dog turned and trotted toward the woods, looking back over its shoulder. The girl pressed her face into the man's neck, crying. He stroked her hair. "It's all right," he said. "I'm here. You're safe. I'll always be here." And the man was so strong. Blaze knew it must be true. He was lying on his back. He was no longer nothing, or everything among the stars, or a child coming to terms with the fact he had no father who would always be there to protect him. He was lying on his back, and he felt fine, though he had the recent memory that this hadn't recently been the case at all. A face hung above him. It looked scared. Maybe that was because it was dark and the roof above their heads was broken and splintered and leaking like a sieve. The face was Dante's. Blaze sat up, wincing, as if he expected pain, but there wasn't any. Dante lunged forward and hugged him as hard as he could. "Get off me!" Blaze laughed. "You're all muddy!" Dante withdrew and wiped tears from his eyes. But all that did was smear more mud around. "You're back." His voice was so small, Blaze had to laugh again. "What?"
He looked around the cramped room with the shoddy roof.
Actually, let's start with that. What?
Dante's face went through several emotions at once. He shook his head.
The minister's hunting us. I'll tell you on the way, just don't get hurt again.
Blaze stood. One of his swords was on his belt, the other was sandwiched between what appeared to be a pile of lumber and a ton of mud. He yanked it free.
Wait. Again? What happened last time?
I feel fine. Dante pulled him out of the tent-shaped room into a rainstorm. Oddly, instead of leaves and branches and whatnot, the cloudy sky was visible. To his right, a long, dark wall stretched in both directions. The usual bits of tree were everywhere, but the ground beneath him wasn't the hard, smooth surface of a flat. It was very definitely mud. Dirt. The stuff that sticks to the surface of the earth. Sea was goggling at him, eyes like two full moons.
You.
Me, Blaze said. People were crying and moaning in multiple directions. Dante muttered into his loom. Blaze had the feeling he ought to be more concerned by the rainy, shrieking, smashed-up chaos around him, but the truth was he felt great.
The minister's forces are on the other side of the trunk, Dante said. Roughly 10 o'clock. Ours are waiting outside the nearest Lauren at 5 o'clock. Somba, Moon, and Ast are already on their way to meet them.
He took off jogging, away from the dark wall. He hopped over something. A body. Something clicked in Blaze's mind. Somehow the Lauren had toppled. He must have been in it. Gotten hurt in the fall. Dante had healed him. But how could the tree...
The Outlanders! They're right here! God save us! Gods!
Something darted through the leaves and she went silent. But others were calling out in her stead, beseeching the minister for help. Dante swore and broke into a sprint, diverting around the busted lumber of a pub. Martial commands barked through the night. Dante skidded in the mud, facing the box canyon of a shattered flat. He turned around, ran out the way they'd come in, and hooked around the debris. A couple of clicks went off, followed by thuds, the Spirish soldiers' mechanical bows.
"They're here," the man said. "They're heading south."
His bows clicked. The bolt flew through the shreds of Dante's cloak. C dropped to one knee and fired back. Her arrow hissed through the night. The man groaned. The path ahead was hemmed in by the remains of a flat. The ground was strewn with broken wood, crushed branches, shards of ceramics, and splintered furniture. Blaze wove through it, following Dante's path. After 100 yards, the flat to their right ceased. Dante cut south through a field mounded by thick clusters of leafy branches. A lauren loomed a couple 100 yards away, lofts alight with lanterns, but there was too much wreckage and rain to see if Narashtivik's army was waiting at its base. More of the crossbows clacked ahead and to the right. Green-clad soldiers spilled over the remnants of a flat, shouting to each other as they fired on the 3 escaping foreigners. Dante veered to the left, putting more branches between themselves and the enemy. The loss of vital seconds proved a crucial mistake. Ahead, a phalanx of green-clad troops poured from a gap in the flat, cutting them off. Rain glistened on swords and spears. Dante attempted to cut toward 3 o'clock, but that was only taking them further from the next lauren, where their reinforcements were currently waiting to help them escape from call. The minister's men kept pace, paralleling them through the rain. With less debris ahead of them, they were able to close ground. Dante put his back to them, returning towards the main ruins of the tree. Blaze and C followed. Dante spoke into his loon in quick, choppy barks, then went silent.
"We're doomed, aren't we?" Blaze said. "It's okay," Dante said over his shoulder. "Narashtivik is safe."
Blaze splashed behind him.
"You got Selen! Well, I hope you used it to make us impervious to arrows. Or is that what brought you down from the tree?"
In a sense.
Dante pointed to a chunk of flat just ahead. It was 50 feet square and sunk partially into the mud, its surface just a couple of feet above the ground. Smashed buildings sat atop it.
Time to make a stand.
He jumped up to its top. Blaze followed. C right beside him. Across the field, the troops were a couple hundred feet away and closing fast. Bolts sailed through the rain. Dante moved behind a freestanding wall.
C, pick off as many of them as you can. Blaze, deal with anyone who gets up. I'll make sure few of them do.
With a rumbling slurp, the mud around the flat began to sink, forming a moat. Blaze got behind a wall and drew his swords. He wasn't sure about the exact nature of the plan. It wasn't like they could hold off the entire force indefinitely. A better plan might be to flee into the woods, lose the minister's pursuit, and circle around to rendezvous with their soldiers somewhere to the west. Then again, with potential lookouts in every Lauren from here to the Wodens, that would be more than a little difficult. Regardless of their options, this was where they were, fortified in an elevated position with plenty of cover. More importantly, Dante had chosen it, and Dante was not in the business of being outsmarted. C's bow twanged, firing through a crack in the wood wall. Enemy's bolts answered, drumming into their cover. Through another crack, Blaze watched the soldiers dash forward. One fell, struck by an arrow, but they were urged on by their captains. Once they came within 100 feet, some took cover behind branches to snipe at the platform. Most continued straight forward. C stopped firing, sighting down the shaft of an arrow. Dante was holding back, too. Blaze joined them by default, but reached for the nether, trying to figure out how many figurative arrows he had left in his quiver. To his surprise, the shadows responded as if he hadn't touched them all day. When the first of the enemy got within 20 feet, C fired, reloaded, and fired again. Two men were down before the others neared the flat and were stopped by the moat, crying out in dismay. C felled a third soldier. A couple tried to leap across, but fell to the bottom with a thick splash of mud and rain. From so close, C could hardly miss. One man after another was knocked into the mud, but there were far more troops in the field than arrows in her quiver. The men turned and ran for cover. Blaze knew better than to celebrate. The crossbows rattled C's wall with a volley. Blaze felt the incoming nether an instant before it burst behind the bolts, exploding the wooden wall. C cried out, shielding herself from the hail of splinters. She threw herself flat and scurried behind the wall, protecting Dante, bolts shredding the air above her. Dante fired back, nether streaking from his fingers. Men screamed in the field. Blaze risked a lookout. 40 feet away, a crew of soldiers heaved up the planks dropped by the men Dante had just killed. They ran toward the moat. Dante hurled up more dark lances at them, but the energy burst into tatters, disrupted by someone hidden in the ruins. The minister's troops hurled boards across the gap. Dante splayed his hand. Nothing happened. He swore and drew his sword. C dropped one of the enemy troops, then ran through the open space to join Dante. Soldiers ran across the planks and charged their position. C cast aside her bow and drew a short sword and a knife. Blaze stepped into the nether. Invisible, he ran sidelong into the opposition, taking one through the neck and another through the ribs. The blades didn't sink in as easily as they should have. It was like hacking into thick gelatin or semi-frozen meat, but the men shrieked in shock and pain. Blaze struck again and again, felling them. The others raised their swords, turning in fearful circles. Blaze wheeled his sword down on the head of a third, aiming for maximum demoralization. The man slumped to his knees and fell on his face. Six of the men broke, running back across the boards.
"Engage them!"
the minister shouted from the darkness.
Blaze dismantled a fourth with stabs through the ribs. That sparked the others to vacate this place of mysterious death.
They burst forward, swarming around the wall, hiding Dante and C. Crossbow bolts tore past Blaze,
killing two of those who had chosen to retreat. A stray bolt hit him in the leg. He faltered, falling out of the nether. He threw himself back into cover. Swords flashed behind the wall. Men made unpleasant dying sounds.
"Aron on a platter! That thing is sharp," C said. "It went straight through their swords."
"It did better," Dante answered. "It's made from a god's bones." Blaze inspected his leg. The bolts had hardly penetrated his calf. He removed it and hastily bandaged the wound. The storm of bolts tapered off, leaving them in a lull of rain and mist. Shouts erupted to the south. Blaze peeked through a gap. Most of the men in the field had turned to face the other way. Impossibly tall figures ran from one patch of cover to the next, closing on the Spirish forces. And then the clash of swords drowned out the rain. Dante emerged from the cover of the wall.
"Well, we managed to hang on long enough. Good work. Ready to run?"
Blaze leaned against the boards in front of him.
"Engage as we go, or is this one of them all-out retreats?"
"Our duty now is to get everyone home safe." Dante strode forward.
"That means we..."
He threw up his hands. Splinters burst from the wall. Shadows erupted around him, knocking him down. He forced himself back to his feet, but his face was as white as the moon.
"Run! Run as fast as you can!"
Before Blaze could reply, Dante took off along the flat, running headlong between the ruins of the buildings. Nether streaked toward him, and he flung out his hand, disrupting it into nothing. He reached the end of the fragment of flat and leapt across, arms windmilling. He landed on the chunk beyond, leaning forward so far it seemed impossible he didn't fall. Down in the field, a lone man ran toward him, hunched over, long limbs swinging. C fired. Her first shot was behind him. Her second shot was ahead. Her third shot was true. But the minister held up his palm, and the arrow snapped as if it had hit a wall. He threw a hive of shadows at Dante. Dante continued to run sidelong, battling them away with furious gestures.
"Go, you idiots!" he bellowed.
C stood, but only to draw a better bead on the minister. A bolt hissed past her. She turned, sighted in on the crossbowmen, and returned fire. Blaze glanced at the field. Torchlight gleamed on swords. Arrows and bolts streamed back and forth. A half-crumbled wall shielding a squad of Spirish troops exploded under a hammer of nether. A team of Norrin warriors charged the exposed men, heedless of the broken wood hailing down around them. Much too early to predict an outcome, and reinforcements could arrive to bolster the minister's numbers at any moment, but it appeared Dante's plan had worked. Blaze dove into the shadows. On the neighboring platform, Dante and the minister were obscured by whirling streams of stars. They lashed at each other like two gods, nether sizzling and bursting like water poured on a raging stove. From the vantage of the netherworld, the flat was awash in blinding silver light, flash after flash strobing across the night. As Blaze ran toward them, Dante fell back, his straining face skeletal and ghastly in the glare.
"Where is my star?" the minister said.
Dante sent a spike of nether at his eye, but the man flicked it aside. Dante grinned, teeth flashing.
"It's gone, just like your insane dream of vengeance."
Light burst so brightly, Blaze threw a hand over his face. Unable to see, he tripped on a pile of rubble but landed with little pain, still in that place where an object's physical nature reflected only dimly through the nether. 50 feet away, Dante lay on his side, kicking away. The minister stood over him with shadows in hand.
"I wouldn't say it's gone. It's just going to take longer. I'll start with you."
The darkness swelled in the minister's hands. Blaze got up and ran. The minister pointed a finger at Dante's forehead.
"And everyone you brought with you. Then I'll find out how you got here and use that path to march my armies on Narashtovik. You think you've saved your people from my justice? Fuck you! You've saved nothing!